Chapter 14, Departure. Princess had difficulty falling asleep and struggled through a fitful night's rest, even though she was exhausted. She woke up in a panic, in a strange place, not knowing where she was. Everything was pitch dark except for one flickering candle. The place smelled musty, the temperature was chilly, and everything was silent except for a distant trickle of water. Then she remembered she was in the cave, and her panic began to subside. But then Princess realized she didn't know if it was day or night, and that none of her family was there. She was suddenly terrified that they had left her and yelled out, "Mom! Dad! Grandpa!" She immediately realized how ridiculous that thought was and felt stupid and embarrassed, but her heart was still racing. Princess remembered that she was still naked in a blanket as she stood up, but saw her somewhat dry clothes neatly folded on a rock beside her. Everyone must already be up and packing to leave. Princess slipped on her clothes and shivered as the cool, damp cloth slid against her skin. She then grabbed the candle and headed outside, assuming that her family was there since there was no answer to her embarrassing call. She reached the entrance and was grateful that no one had heard her scream. Princess was blinded by the brightness upon stepping out onto the ledge at the cave entrance. She was forced to pause there for a few minutes while her eyes adjusted to the morning light. Everything seemed brilliant, and she squinted and blinked the tears from her eyes, even though the mouth of the cave was shaded. "It must be very late," she thought. "I wonder why they let me sleep." Her thoughts were interrupted by the sound of someone approaching down the path. A moment later, her mother appeared and greeted her. "Good morning, Princess. How are you feeling?" she asked. "Good, Mom," Princess answered. "What time is it?" Her mother laughed and told her that it was mid-morning, that they were just about fully packed to leave, and that there was a little porridge saved for her, although it would be cold by now. Princess couldn't believe she had slept through Grandpa's morning grumbling and all the noise they must have made dragging out sacks of siege food, but her mother assured her that she had. "It seems that the only thing that wakes you up is that silly goat," she joked. Princess laughed, and for the first time that morning she didn't feel foolish or scared. She suddenly felt the urge to jump into her mother's arms and hug her, but was worried she'd knock them both off the cliff. Princess simply said, "Thanks, Mom. I love you," and followed her as she walked back up the path. The sun was high in the sky. It was closer to midday than sunrise, and Princess felt guilty for delaying their long journey home. No one complained, though, and as she ate her cold, thick cereal and saw their tired, bloodshot eyes, Princess realized that they had not slept well either. Her father had clearly been surprised about her birth story, and she suspected her parents had remained awake for several hours having some lengthy, private discussions. Hugh must have noticed her attention and paused what he was doing to walk over to her. He spread his arms in a welcoming hug, and she stood. They wrapped their arms around each other, and he held her tightly as they embraced and whispered, "Princess, you are my daughter, and I will always love you more than anything in the world. You know that, don't you?" Princess felt tears welling in her eyes for the 100th time on this trip and softly replied, "Yeah, I know, Daddy. I love you too, and you'll always be my father. I never even met Osred, and I'm glad. He sounds like a jerk, so I'm lucky to have you as my real father." They both laughed and cried in each other's arms for several minutes. Princess half expected Orphan to yell out some sort of joking comment for them to break it up and get moving, but she saw him simply standing, smiling, and silently watching instead. She let go of her father, raced over to Orphan, and gave him a hug and a peck on his stubbly cheek. "I love you too, Grandpa," she added. "But why is everybody just standing around? We have a long trip, a heavy cart, and the day is half over." Orvin chuckled, gave her a squeeze, and bellowed, "Now that is clearly my granddaughter. She obviously inherited her common sense from me." May cleaned and organized the cave for their next visit, should there be one. Princess realized how appreciative future visitors would be, but chuckled to herself about her mom's mom-like behavior. She wondered if her mother was always neat and organized. Perhaps she had once been messy like her and been magically transformed by motherhood. Princess cleared the cooking area and did her best to eliminate all trace of their presence while Hugh and Orvin finished loading the cart. Hugh and Princess then went down to disguise the cave entrance after May came out and said she was done. Princess started neatly stacking the stones to create a wall, but Hugh stopped her. He showed how they needed to be haphazardly placed to not only mask the crack, but to make it seem somewhat natural. He explained how anyone who saw a wall in an unexpected place would be immediately tempted to tear it down to see what was behind. One more pile of rocks in an almost inaccessible ledge on a cliff filled with rocks would likely be ignored if they were noticed at all. The group was finally ready to leave, and they all took one last look at the castle ruins. It was starting to feel familiar to Princess again, but it no longer felt like her long-lost home. This place was in her past, and she was uncertain where her future was leading. "Grandpa, I'd like to see Equin's grave before we leave," she asked. "I figured you would," Orvin replied. "Your father already made the same request. It's on the way." The four of them left the castle grounds, and Hugh and Orvin struggled with the cart as they went down the steep grade at the gate. "I hate going down these stupid hills," growled Orvin as the cart pushed him and made his feet slide down the dirt path. "Didn't you complain about going up?" Princess asked with a laugh. "Always one with a wisecrack, aren't you?" Orvin grumbled. "She is your granddaughter," May observed with a smile. "Humph," was all Orvin grunted, but although no one could see it, he was grinning ear to ear. They stopped about 500 feet past the castle wall, and Orvin motioned towards the right. They fought their way through thick brambles until they reached the forest wall. He took them inside, and Princess marveled at how he knew where to go after all these years. She was just about to ask how he knew the way when he stopped and pointed at the tallest oak tree she had ever seen. Osred insisted on seeing the bodies to prove I had complied with his despicable command, but refused to let Equin or her daughter be buried in the family plot. He viewed them as mistakes which he intended to erase from memory. I was fine with that because I felt that poor girl and my granddaughter deserved to rest in better company. "I searched the woods along the top of the ridge until I found the perfect spot," Orvin explained. He took a few more steps and Princess gasped. They had come to a small clearing with that giant oak tree landmark at one end and two small mounds in the center. There was a stone cairn atop of each grave, and the entire clearing was covered with bluebells. Memories of a similar meadow where she and Sin had first pronounced their love for each other came flooding into her mind, and she dropped to her knees. Everything suddenly felt connected to her. She felt a hand on her shoulder and looked up to see her father crying next to her. He reached for her hand and led her into the sea of bluebells. The two of them stood staring at the graves for several long minutes while May and Orvin hugged each other at the edge of the clearing. Hugh gave Princess a squeeze and whispered, "Here lies my daughter and your mother. Let us leave them in peace in this woodland garden as I take my daughter and her mother home. Mea amor aeternus lucet sicut stella," whispered Princess. "My eternal love shines like a star. Let's go home, Daddy." Princess found her spirits rising as they walked down the road. Questions from her entire life had been answered, including some she had never suspected to ask. Her situation really hadn't changed, and Princess was feeling better, despite all the reality-shattering truths she learned in the past day. At least, she was feeling better until they reached Pride. Princess felt depression rise again when they reached the once cheerful meadow around Pride. Hugh and Orvin put their backs into pulling the cart faster as they passed, and no one said a word. Princess even took a turn at pulling the wagon once they were past Pride so that her grandfather could have a break without having to stop. The memory of those poor people settled on the four of them and weighed them down as they continued the rest of the trip in silence. The dark mood caused another disturbing thought to come to Princess's mind. She would never be able to tell Sin most of what she had learned, at least not for a long time. Not only did this mean more secrets, but the truth about who she was and the fact that the threat against them was made by the King of Wessex seemed much larger than the dragon story. How could she not tell him? If she didn't tell him, would she be able to love him fully? Would he be able to love her fully? She turned these thoughts over and over in her mind the entire walk home. While her reverie might have fed her depression, it also made the trip seem shorter. She was startled when the men stopped and began unloading the cart. She hadn't realized they had arrived and was somewhat dreading returning to the village. They unloaded the supplies from the cart and carefully passed them through the underbrush and into the forest while trying to disrupt the vegetation as little as possible. Hugh and Orvin hid the cart across the road while May and Princess began carrying the supplies up the valley. The four people made several trips to bring the supplies to the edge of the forest near the stream by the village. Hugh explained that he and Orvin would discreetly retrieve them later during dinner or after everyone had turned in. They looked at each other, thinking about their shared experiences and secrets until Orvin said, "Well, let's get on with it. I had a piss-poor breakfast and missed lunch. I'm hungry and ready to get something to eat." The other three laughed in agreement and began splashing through the stream into their valley home. Their neighbors were excited by their return and wanted to hear about their trip and especially about the castle. Princess let Hugh and Orvin lead the stories. They described the castle ruins and talked about how the area locals were disassembling the walls and stealing the stones. Most of the villagers were offended by this act, but Orvin disagreed. He thought that reusing the materials for useful purposes was far better than leaving them as a pointless monument to a forgotten time. Someone asked Princess if the cave was still the same. She answered by rubbing her still tender head and saying, "For some reason, the ceilings seem a bit lower than when I was 6. Sin was excited beyond belief at seeing Princess and concerned about her apparent coolness. She almost seemed like a different person. She wasn't the giggling girl who was skipping down the stream on an adventure just yesterday morning. He asked if she had seen something which had changed her love for him when they were finally alone. Princess looked at him for a moment, gave him a big kiss, and decided to share a little more with him than they did with the others. "Sin, don't be silly," she said. "Nothing will change my love for you. But you're right. I saw some things that made me realize the reality and true meaning of the stories I've listened to my entire life. I saw the ruins of my old home. I know I was only 6 years old when I left, but I remembered it as this girt, grand, beautiful place. Now it's just a pile of rocks and a bunch of weeds with a few pieces of charred wood rotting into the ground. But the village we've passed on the way affected me the most." Sin gave her a puzzled look. He didn't remember any castles or villages along the route from Cheddar and didn't know of any within a reasonable day's journey to the east. He was about to ask which village Princess meant when she saw his expression and continued. "The village we visited doesn't exist anymore," she began. "It's just an overgrown field now, just like my home. But my people knew the dragon was coming, and some of us hid in a secret cave. These poor people had no warning and huddled together in their main lodge, hoping the dragon would pass. Instead, the dragon belched his fire on the town, and they all died, trapped in that burning building. I saw their pile of bleached bones covered only by weeds on the scorched earth where that village once stood. I always knew of the dragon's rage and his eternal vengeance towards us, but I never really understood what that meant until yesterday. He is pure evil, and he will do the same to us if he discovers we're alive." Sin blinked in amazement. He had been willing to accept that the woman he loved believed in the dragon stories she had been told her entire life, but never thought they were real. But he knew she was sincere from the sadness in her eyes and the quivering terror in her voice. This was not some corrupted memory of a child. She had now seen the actual death and destruction told in those stories, and Sid had no doubt whatsoever that what she saw was real. He drew her into his arms, and as she began to sob again, Sin felt frightened for the first time. The next 4 days were a bittersweet blur as Princess and Sin prepared to leave. Orvin, Hugh, and May were going to take them to Weston and return in a week, but Sin, and possibly Princess, were leaving forever. The village had adopted Sin as one of their own and dreaded losing him, but the thought of losing Princess was inconceivable, and no one wanted to admit that they might be saying goodbye forever. The result was that Princess and Sin were subjected to a steady stream of individual goodbyes. In some ways, this was much more personal than a group send-off, but it also made it much more emotional and draining as they repeated one after another. By the third day, both Princess and Sin were anxious and eager to be away from everyone. They snuck off to the hillside pasture outside of town for some peace and quiet. They had just laid down on the grass and closed their eyes under the afternoon sun when a shadow passed over them. "I'm so glad I found you two alone," said Bede as he stood over them. Sin and Princess both softly groaned, but sat up and greeted Bede. "I'm sure you're tired of all the goodbyes, so I'll make this brief," he continued. "I wish I was going with you. This valley feels more like a prison to me every day, and it will feel even more so after you've left. I've made these little necklaces to remind you of us." Bede handed them each a leather strap with a pendant carved from ram's horn. The carvings were intricate and beautiful. Sin's was a carving of a wolf's head, and Princess's was of a dragon. Sin said, "Thank you, Bede. I will always treasure this, but you never need to worry about me forgetting you." He reached out to shake Bede's hand and was drawn into a hug. "Same goes for me," added Princess. "These are so beautiful. You never cease to amaze me, even after all the years we've known each other." She reached up and lightly kissed him on his cheek. Bede stared deeply into her eyes and said, I know the truth, my princess, and I'm glad that now you do as well. I will always be here to serve you." Princess suddenly stiffened, but Bede turned and walked away without another word. "He is a good fellow, but he is certainly odd, isn't he?" commented Sin. Princess just nodded and said, "We'd better get back to the village.